So what we're going to do for most part today is keep trucking through chapter 5 and kind of finish off the parts we're going to touch in chapter 5. If you'll take a look at the schedule, also updated that yesterday, or I think it was pretty late last night when I finally posted it, in terms of when some homeworks might be due and the stuff we're going to be covering. So things kind of got pushed back a little bit. But we'll keep moving forward. I think we're still going to get farther along than traditionally has happened. Okay, so let's take a look. We're going to kind of formalize some analysis we've already done because it can be useful in terms of speccing out a control system later, which we're getting really close to. I have all the tools to define our performance and analyze performance. And we'll get ramped up actually designing controllers now after this section, basically. The book calls this steady state error of feedback control systems, I think. It's a little bit misleading in that these techniques apply whether you have feedback control or not. The kind of transfer functions we'll talk about are common for feedback control systems, but again, the same kind of analysis applies. So we've been looking at this so far from a perspective of that final value theorem. And it showed up basically on every problem in the test because it shows up everywhere in controls. But we also can look at this from a kind of higher level generalized perspective and know immediately based on what our transfer function looks like, we can have some idea what the final steady state error is going to be for a system to our various kind of test inputs. All right. So let's define the kind of system we're going to look at. And we will draw the transfer function, or the block diagram, sorry, for what will look like a feedback control system. But again, what we're going to talk about applies even if you don't have feedback, but your transfer function still matches the forms we're going to talk about. Okay, so we're going to have some input R for reference, some output Y. Okay. And what we're really going to look at kind of is this error here. And know right away that transfer function is this, or we can get some kind of expression for the error E in the Laplace domain by just multiplying by the R term over to the other side. Okay, so let's look first at a step input. What's a step input? What does it look like? Yeah, so we have a kind of time domain is something. And if we look at, let's say, a unit step, 1 over s. Or, yeah, let's go ahead and write it as a. Sorry. Analysis doesn't really change so much. What is the step input in the time domain? It's 1 for a unit step. What is it? A for what condition? That's right. For all time greater than 0, this has a constant value of A. Okay. So let's take a look. We'll start out. We want to look at the steady state error of that system, given this step input. So we know it's going to be that. So we can write, probably want to write this. You know right away if we have the step input, right, that this S and that S are going to cancel. Right? So we have that. Correct? This, the S from the step command in our transfer function, or our representation of error, cancels with the S of the final value theorem. Right? Well, if we look at this limit, what we can do is simplify this a little bit further and get some insight. Really could just have that, right? Because it's really, though, that GC and GP terms are really the only ones that have an S that's going to matter as it goes to zero, right? Everything else here is constant. So what we can look at is, or what we can see from this is that this GC, GP tells us something about our system. What do we call that transfer function if we have this kind of setup? GC, GP. Yeah, that's just the open loop transfer function in this case. Right. So what we can see is that, hey, this open loop transfer function, we're going to continue seeing this over the next few weeks, is that this open loop transfer function, even if I have a closed loop system, can give me a lot of information about how the closed loop system performs. It's kind of interesting. What do we call the value of this open loop transfer function as S goes to zero? Well, it shows up here, yeah. So it kind of shows up there. Steady state error, if we're looking just at the open loop term, if we're looking, I want to know, we kind of have a special term. We generally will call that the DC gain of that transfer function, remember? So the kind of open loop, the DC gain of the forward path, we'll say, or the open loop transfer function is basically defined here. Okay. Well, let's look at the form of that GP. Let's try to generalize what that might look like, and then from that distill out some generalizable information about steady state error. So let's define this way. I need to match up all my subscripts and stuff. Okay, let's talk through what's going on here. Basically what we're saying, excuse me, breathing in some chalk. So we have a product of all our system zeros, right? And we're saying we have M zeros, right? This capital pi usually is products, it's like just like the summation notation, but we're products, right? So we could have M different zeros, and we've just factored them out into this S plus zero form. All right. We have a gain k out front. We have an s to the n term, or we haven't really said what n needs to be, but it's some positive value. And then we're saying we have q poles. And again, we're just multiplying. So this could be s plus 1 times s plus 2 times s plus minus 2, which is that kind of summation. All right. So just generic form representing I have a bunch of zeros, I have a bunch of poles. I have a gain on top, and I have an S to some power on the bottom. Right. Is that a C? That's going to be I, because we're looking at the product over I, between 1 and M.
Also, is that PK or P subscript K?
P subscript K. So it's the kth pole in this product term. Okay.
What is S?
S is Laplace S.
No, that's
the
big S.
S to the N. No, Laplace S. It's a S to the some power. So we've seen S squareds and pure S's and things like that. So what I'm saying is I can factor out maybe from, if I have some generic denominator, I can factor it out, and I may have some S's that factor completely out. And a few things we're saying, also we're going to specify that we don't have any zeros at zero. We're going to say that we don't have any poles that are zero. And basically that's that we have M zeros and all these two things are really saying those two conditions are just saying we have more poles than zeros. If you take graduate controls or if you go into grad school and have to take qualifying exams, there's kind of weird things happening when you start having more zeros than poles. It's a kind of common question for the oral part of your qualifying exam. Things go weird. But we're going to avoid that. We always have more poles than zeros. Okay. So we're also going to define a kind of special thing or talk about this S to the N. We already talked about it a little bit. What is S times something relate to the time domain? The derivative. Okay, what's 1 over S in the Laplace kind of an integral? So if I have something over S, right, we're going to say this is a pure integrator term. All right, so that's just like a pure integration of what's happening. And what we're going to see today is that the number of pure integrators in our transfer function gives me a lot of information about what the steady state error is going to look like. So much so, in fact, that the number defines the type number of the system. So if we don't have any pure integrators, we say we have a type 0 system. Right. We have one pure integrator. So if n is 1, we have a type 1 system. We have two pure integrators. S squared out front of everything else in my denominator. I have a type 2 system. Okay. Well, let's look at this first case. We want to look. We want to get there. What do we need to happen here for my limit here, my steady state error, to go to zero for the step input? I need a higher value of n, higher than what? Higher than zero. Right? So as long as n is greater than zero, as long as I have one pure integrator, right? This guy is going to have a zero in its denominator, which makes the denominator of the whole thing get large, which means the error goes to zero. You guys following that?
Wouldn't it like approach A?
No, because as this approaches zero, or as this approach, what's where we're at? As S approaches zero, this gets really large. Anything over an infinite value is zero. So you end up with something over infinity as S goes to zero, which is zero in the limit. Right, so as remember, we're taking the less as S goes to zero. Right, if we have n greater than one, or greater than zero, this guy is in the denominator of GCGP. So GCGP is getting really small. Or it's getting GCGP is getting really large because its denominator is getting small. Right? We're going to a zero here in the denominator. So this is getting really large. We get a really large thing in this denominator, which means that goes to zero. Okay. So for if we have n equals zero, what happens? Well, first we're going to say, hey, that remember that n defines the type of system we have. So we said if n's greater than zero, it goes the error goes to zero. Well, what happens when it is zero? When we have a type zero system. Right. So we have, I'm going to write ESS for the steady state error. It's greater than zero, yes. What we're going to say, right, is basically this is I just plug in S as zero for those guys. I can effectively look at it that way, right? I'm going to rewrite that as a KP. And we're going to call that the position error constant. So this can end up being a performance measure or design characteristics, a design spec for your control system. Right, so I need this to be within some range. With me so far? All right. So for a step input, if I have a type zero system, this defines my steady state error to a step input. If I have a type 1 or above system, my steady state error is 0. All right. Let's look now at a ramp.
Does every number above 0 make it 0 error?
Yes, ma'am. You're not going to get a 0.001 out there.
Oh, because n has to be an integer.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So for our ramp input, and the Laplace domain is what?
No.
A squared. We're going to have a ramp of slope A. Okay. So our error then is what?
A over 1 plus GCGP times 1 over S squared.
That. For our ramp input. Let's, if we're going to look at the error of that, right, we need to look We have that one S that's always part of that final value theorem. It's going to cancel one of the square part of that. So we end up with a steady state error that's going to look something like that. Well, we can rewrite that limit as we did before. What limit here really matters?
The
SGCGP part.
The S just goes to zero.
The S part, the S term by itself is going to go to zero. That's right.
But as S approaches zero, that GCGP gets huge.
Not necessarily. You don't know what's in GCGP yet. Well, the GCGP could have some S's in it. We're actually this time going to write this is down to that. So again, we see that the steady state error to this ramp input depends, at least in part, on what the open loop transfer function is. All right, so if we have, let's say, a type 1 system. Well, actually, let's back up. For a type 0 system. All right.
It's going to go to infinity.
The error goes to infinity. Why?
Because your S would go to 0 regardless of what GCGP is.
Right. So what we're saying, a type 0 system, I don't have an S, a pure S down here, a pure integrator in the denominator of my GCGP transfer function. So I'm not able to cancel this S. So when he goes to zero, this does go get large and the error goes to infinity. Okay? So for type zero, infinite error to a ramp input. Steady state.
So we do know GCGP?
We know the form of GCGP.
Oh, it's still the same.
Okay, let's look at a type 1 system to this. What does this look like for a type 1 system? Just one S in the bottom, right? So we could write, let's go ahead and do that to kind of get a look at what it, I'm going to leave off the subscripts of the products right now, but they're the same as they were over here to save us a little bit of writing. So in this case, I can look at what's the limit of this guy as S goes to 0? Or what's the limit if GCGP is this, what does this kind of work out to be? Okay. So, for the type 1 system, you can bring this down. We have A over, well, we know the S will cancel, right? We have a pure integrator in the denominator here that can cancel with that guy. So we have is it the summation or
the multiplication?
Yeah, the product, right? So if the all these you have this S plus P1, S plus P2, or S plus that's a Z. Z1 plus times S plus Z2 times S plus Z3. All the S's go to 0. You just have the Z terms, the zeros themselves. And that expression is going to be called KV, and it's going to be the that called the velocity error constant.
Why is it that you can just take away that first S instead of multiplying it?
This first S cancels this S. Okay. So looking at that, this type 1 system, do we get error in this case?
Yes.
Yeah, we have some error in for a type 1 system. How about for type 2 and above?
No. You have like an extra S.
We have an extra S. Right. So for type 2 and above, in this case, for a ramp input, we get 0 steady state error. No, that's a different case. So the constant itself is defined this way. So this scaling factor, you'll see different people drop it in here. But it doesn't. Basically, you'll see it most often this way, because your spec will be, this is my velocity error constant. And then the scaling will depend a little bit about what the actual kind of transfer function is. Or in some sense, this K, right, that K is part of GCGP quite often. So you'll see that, right, this is the limit of GCGP if the K there is explicitly included in the forward loop, the open loop part of the transfer function. Okay. So that's to a ramp input. So we saw for a step input, we had some error for a type 0 system. For a ramp input, we have some error for a type 1 system and below. Right, an infinite error for a type 0 system. Let's look now at our kind of final tests. Put. We talk about generally. And it follows the same argument, so it'll be a little more concise this time.
So when we're looking at the whole limit, we found that there aren't any S's in it.
Type 1 has, in the limit or in the transfer function? Well, if we're looking at the final value theorem, if we have a type 1 system, we can kind of look at it and say, well, the S that's in the final value theorem will cancel the one S in the type 1 system, the pure integrator. So for the, depending on what the input is, that's going to give us some indication of what the error. That's what we're talking through. Okay, so for parabola, or you'll see it called, particularly in this context, an acceleration input. if you think about the step input being a force, let's say, then the ramp input ends up being the velocity or the acceleration from that. No, the velocity from that, which is why it's called velocity constraint. And then you get parabolic acceleration. So what is a parabolic input? Or
A over
S cubed if we have some most generic one. So we know right away that the error is that. We follow the same argument we just did, so we want to look at the limit. That. Let's still got the limit in there. Okay. So what type system do I need to get no error to a parabolic or acceleration input?
Three or higher.
Three or higher. Exactly right. So if we have a type 2 system in this case, if we have, so it's, what's the error from a type 0 system here? Infinity. What's the error for a type 1 system here?
Also
infinity. So what's the error for a type 2 system? A type 2 system, this guy balances. Get some finite value, right? So the what we would define, as you can guess, we're going to define another constant. Following our trend, we call this acceleration error constant. All right. So if you look in your book, there is a table that pretty concisely summarizes everything we just talked about. It's table 5.2. And basically, if you look at these three test inputs and these constants we've defined, you can start setting up some engineering specifications on what your open loop transfer function needs to look like in order to meet certain specs on error. And these system types are common, 0, 1, 2. Right? Probably the most common you're going to see for most systems. Most of the analysis we're going to do is based on having type 0, 1, or 2 system. Okay. Questions about that? Largely just looking through some special cases of applying that final value theorem, right? But at least be aware. So if you're in a job and talking to some old school controls engineering start talking about velocity error constant, you at least know where to look. All right. Know those trends between type 0, 1, 2. Okay. Yes, sir?
How would it look for an impulse input?
For an impulse input, steady state error tends not to really have so much meaning.
Okay.
Right? Because what's an impulse? What's the formal definition of an impulse? Almost instantaneously? Instantaneously, right? So impulse of input Dirac delta has infinite magnitude and zero duration, remember. So in that sense, steady state error doesn't really have a real meaning in a lot of ways. Right. So we don't do that. The other reason you won't see that analysis here is we don't drive systems with impulses. Right? An impulse, that's an impulse to the table. That's not how we drive things around. Right? So again, the context of these things is being able to set up specs, kind of easily definable specs for steady state error for common command types. Right? And yeah, we won't always be giving a step or a parabola, but this allows us to kind of have a benchmark comparison of different control systems. You'll see something like that. You're still not going to apply the impulses directly. But we can use some knowledge of impulse responses to generate an intelligent command. And we're going to do that in about 2 weeks. Other questions? Okay. So let's look at an example. I'm going to leave that up.
Real quick.
Yep.
So for the type 1 system with array of input, what is the steady state error? Because you wrote what KV is, but would it just be A over KV is the steady state error?
Yes. A over KV. What do you mean?
So the error for position is A over 1 plus KP.
Velocity is the ramp. You hear that called velocity input sometimes.
It's A over KP.
Yeah, there you go. It was just what was right here.
So why is position the only one that's different?
What do you mean? I think they all follow the same form, don't they? Something. The S canceling, yeah. Yep.
What happens if you have a system where R isn't constant, like it's not constantly step or ramp function?
Sure, I think that's going to be the majority of systems you deal with in your life. That's not going to be the case. The reason that we use these steps or ramps or impulses or whatever these kind of commands we're talking about is they provide kind of benchmark analysis of these different control systems. And even the error and overshoot and rise time to a step input gives us a lot of information of how that system is going to perform if the input's not a step.
So you can approximate it using...
You can approximate it and you can get some information about what the response to a generic input would be by looking at how the response to a step changes based on changes in my system. Right. And what will, let's see, is that going to show up here? For example, if I have, instead of a step, let's say, there's my pure step. I'm almost never going to give a system that. But I might give it something like this. Really kind of aggressive S-curve command. Well, if this gets more and more aggressive, starts looking like a step. So basically what we're saying is that our analysis, the exact values of overshoot and stuff like that still never apply, don't apply for that S-curve command. But that the trends in our controller, if we increase proportional gain, this happens, or if we change our controller in this way, increase damping or increase the natural frequency, those same trends, we increase damping, the overshoot goes down, still apply. Even if this command's not a pure step anymore.
So that type of system could be a system with no overshoot?
You can still get overshoot from this S-curve. It's just not going to match that approximation we got when we did that analysis. Because that's based on it being a step input. You could, even in this really slow, so even if I have this really slow S-curve, let's say, depending on what my system is, that could be enough where I still, my response would still be this. All right. So if I wanted less overshoot to my really slow S-curve, I still would know that from my knowledge of the step inputs that I need to increase damping. Even though I'm not giving it the pure step anymore. I'm giving it this blue thing instead. Right, so that's really the utility of these test inputs, is they give us some intuition about what parameters affect the responses and how we might change what's in GC to achieve our objective, even if the real input is not one of these test inputs. Where you're going to see ramps quite often is in this domain. So where, let's see. We might have stepped through this on the first day, maybe. Let's see. So we have these type of relationships. So I have some kind of force input, right? And I push on the thing and then let it coast for a while, and then I pull on it to stop it, right? So I step on my gas to accelerate, and I hold it in place, and then I slam on the brakes, right? Well, what I'm doing is getting up to a constant velocity, cruising at 70 miles an hour or whatever, and then stopping, going to zero velocity. So my position in time then looks like this. Well, quite often, cranes are a good example. My user might issue the velocity command directly. Right, so for a crane, you have some kind of joystick-controlled system. Quite often, what you're issuing is not, I want the force to be this thing, and my desired velocity is move the system forward, right, if I have a joystick or something like that. Right? So, and quite often, what happens is that joystick push button may not be a ramp, but you push the button, go full speed forward, there's going to be some time here that looks like a ramp, because right, you can't change velocity instantaneously.
So it's something where you're inputting a velocity, not an acceleration.
It's quite often you're going to see that.
Like a car that's inputting acceleration.
Right.
With your pedal.
Right. So you also might see this, like the example we're going to work today is, for example, if I have some satellite or something, right, and I want to scan someplace in the sky, and I want to scan back and forth, right? So I could have a ramp in angle, desired angle this way. It stops, goes back a ramp, and desired angle back the other way, right? So you'll see those kind of piecewise ramps that look like this, where I'm scanning back and forth and kind of have constant rate of change of my rotation. So you'll see these are kind of piecewise ramps. So if you want to track this rate of change, you need to know how well do I track a generic ramp. Right? Even though my full input's not a ramp, it's just kind of piecewise sawtooth thing. More questions? All right. let's set up this example at least. And in fact, we're going to see this in this example. Something similar to that. All right, so this is example 5.3. We're not going to follow it exactly. But we are following kind of the main idea of it. Okay, so in this case, we have what's set up to be kind of the steering controller for some kind of mobile robot, basically. And what we're saying is this kind of GP is kind of the GP in this case is our kind of physical part of our robotic system. We have some GC that's a controller, and then our reference input here is our desired heading. So what direction do we want to be pointing? Our output is the actual heading. Where are we actually pointing? All right. So we set up our control system. Basically, we're going to compare where we want to be pointing with where we are actually pointing and act on it in some way to try to turn the robot. All right. So this is the basic setup for a self-driving car in an obstacle-free environment. Right? The steering part of it, at least. Right? I know I need to be tracking this road, which tells me my desired heading. I'm not pointing that direction. I need to act in some way based on the error to steer my car and stay in the road. So we're going to give a pretty simple, although it turns out to be a great approximation a huge part of the time for these type of systems. Okay? So that's going to be our kind of physical part of this robot, right? The transfer function that represents its GP. What can we say about that transfer function, right, so far? If I give some input to that, what happens? There's a time constant, yeah, the tau maybe gave that away. What does that response look like, though? So if I gave this guy a step input, what's the response look like? So if I had, let's kind of think about this for a second. If I had a step input there, actually, I'm not trying to control it or anything, just a step to the plant.
It'd be
slower than that, maybe. Well, what is the?
We'd have some time before it actually reached that.
That's right.
Steady state, I guess, response.
Sure. What is the transition from, say, I'm at rest to? Well, let's see, maybe if I wrote it like this, would it help at all? What's the inverse Laplace of a system that looks like this?
It's a sine, isn't it? A sonic or sine wave?
Not quite. So this by itself is going to be an exponential, right? Where the reason this is called a time constant is it sets the exponential part of e to the whatever t. Right? It sets the time constant of how that quickly that approaches whatever it's approaching. So our response here would be some really slow turning, depending on what tau is. Right? Tau is time constant is fast, we could get pretty fast response, but we actually asymptotically approach our desired angle. In the math, we actually never get there. In the limit, we do, but strictly speaking, never get there in a finite amount of time. Okay, so as a reminder, we talked about this some time ago. This is different than the type. That's why I kind of wanted to point it out. You're here type 1, type 0, type 1, type 2, and then you're here first order, second order, third order. Right? All we're saying when we say first order for a transfer function, what's the highest power of S that shows up anywhere? So here we have 1, it's a first order system. Right? And you can know, and should know, eventually, if I have a first order system, my response would look something like this. What's the general characteristics of a first order response? And we'll get to more detail on that as well. And what we can do to speed it up. Okay, so we can know right away some idea about my response. Would this response oscillatory at all? Just to the plant?
No.
No, right. So yeah, these first order systems actually don't have anything called damping. Damping is not defined for a first order system, but they don't have overshoot because it's just an exponential. There's no sine or cosine term that shows up. I'm going to define my control transfer function to be that, or the control block to be that. I can write it like this as well. Okay. So one place I'm differing from the book here, they use K1 and K2. I'm using KP and KI because what they're doing without telling you about it is using a proportional integral controller. Right. So what GC is doing is acting proportional to the error plus proportional to 1 over S times the error, proportional to the integral of the error. So this is a PI controller, actually. And we'll see what that does for us in a second. All right. What then is our open loop transfer function? And that is, just that, right? Skipping a little bit of algebra. What's the closed loop? It up, some of the algebra is in the notes. We'll try to save a minute of math. So there we have our closed loop transfer function. Okay. What do we know without evaluating the final value theorem about the steady state error of this system to a step input? Well, what matters for the steady state error?
A step input would be 1 over S and for the steady state error.
Well, think back 20 minutes to what we just defined. What dictates the steady state error here for a step input? Pure integrator. Pure integrator in what?
It would be zero.
In what transfer function? Yeah, let's finish this. In the open loop transfer function, right? So that's this guy. So what kind of system do we have?
Type 1
system. All right. So then what can we say about the steady state error to a step input? Zero to a step input, right? All right. That's assuming KP, KI, all those guys are positive constants. What if KI is zero? Anything change? Yes, is the answer, obviously, if I'm waiting. Well, what happens, right? So if KI is zero, we have KPS What's our system now? What type is it? Now it's type zero. Do we have steady state error to our step input? Yeah, it's a finite value for a step input. Right. So that KI goes away. Right. If we didn't have this KI term in our controller, then we're going to get steady state error to a step input. And what we'll see coming up is that, hey, the function of the integral gain in a PID controller, proportional integrated derivative, is to get rid of steady state error. So we can kind of see that even now, the skills we have so far. All right. If we have some kind of integral gain, then our steady state error to a step goes out to zero. That's what we want.
So we want KI to be really big.
Hold on to that thought for hopefully about 10 minutes. Okay. All right. So we just looked at kind of error to step inputs. Would we want to use step inputs here to kind of answer, think about your question you asked earlier. Right. I have this system that's some kind of robot that wants to steer around some car that's trying to drive. Would I want step inputs in desired heading? Okay, so we have one vote for no, one vote for yes. Other thoughts? Why is that? Not quite. Yeah, I think that's going to be actually the driving factor. Is we know we're not going to be able to change our heading instantaneously, which is what a step input and desired heading would be trying to do. Right. So if I'm facing this way and I change my desired heading to 90 degrees now, I know that I can't instantaneously turn, which is what the step input would be telling me. So it's kind of generally, you know, you can look at step inputs, look at performance, but you want to think about what can my system actually do and let that try to inform what you're asking it to do. So in this case, yeah, a constant velocity turn might make more sense than an instantaneous change. My system might be able to track that constant velocity turn better than it can that step change. All right.
If you wanted to, you could do it so that it's slow and then faster than slow.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. Yeah, that's we're going to talk about some nice ways to think about what the command should be coming up soon. Okay. So I'm going to say maybe let's look at some ramp steering commands. Right. So kind of like maybe our satellite type example, this mobile robot's driving around trying to scan back and forth and see what's happening as it's going or something. So let's look at the error to ramp input. So my steering command might look like this, the one we just talked about, where I'm kind of going steering back and forth, basically, desired heading. So if we look at just one ramp input, what's the steady state error to the ramp? Right. So we know we have that type 1 system. Where KV was what? All right, so what does that equal to for us?
It would be K times KPS plus KI over tau S plus 1.
Yep. Equals to what? So our error steady state then A over K KR. So what does that tell me about, well, how I should choose that integral gain, the KI term? Okay, yeah, so maybe I want KI to be large. Question mark. We don't know. Maybe there's some other implications of picking KI large. Let's look at those. Let's look at the closed loop system for a second. All right. I want to put this in a slightly different form. So just divided top and bottom by tau. Well, what does that let us do to this closed loop transfer function? Does this form look familiar? Yeah, the standard form, right? Look something like this. So what's the natural frequency of the system? Tau, yeah, K. Okay. And then we know 2 zeta omega n Let's look at those two things. So we can write to get a damping ratio, right? Just collecting terms. Well, if I have a really, really large KI, what does that do for natural frequency? Gets really, really large, right? What does that do for damping? Yes, my damping starts going way down if I have a big integral gain in this case. What does that mean for the response? Damping's going down in this case.
Yeah, damping's going down, so you have a faster response,
but more overshoot.
Yeah, so I might overshoot. I'm going to oscillate now.
Longer settling time.
So my settling time. So if I pick a really big KI to get me to really great steady state performance,
you're going to mess up all your
mechanics. I'm going to mess up my transient performance, basically. On my way of getting there, I'm going to oscillate a lot before I settle to that steady state eventually. If there's any kind of disturbance, we haven't modeled a disturbance here. If there's any kind of disturbance that comes in and pokes at this thing, the damping is what's going to dissipate that energy and get rid of that disturbance for us. Right? So I have a really high KI, my damping goes down, now I'm oscillating forever about my ramp.
So you're going to want
to
balance it.
So I need some balance, that's right. Between, I can't just pick KI as infinitely large and say, well, great, my steady state tracking error went away. And that's going to be the case for us almost always, is that there's some trade-off, and that's really the kind of, some of the art of being a control system engineer is picking those kind of appropriate trade-offs for a given system. Okay.
For the 2 zeta omega n,
yep.
Doesn't 2 zeta omega n also equal 1 r k k b over tau from the numerator? Or is...
So the numerator's not quite going to get us there. The denominator, this part is still fine. Sorry about that. So analysis still gets us there. Even without that, still can write that way. And what we just talked through still holds, right? This damping ratio, it's the numerator. Remember, it's the numerator that defines what your natural frequencies and damping ratios are. If we can simplify the denominator in a similar way, it's often convenient. But remember, this is the characteristic equation of the system. It defines the characteristics of the system, right? Damping ratio, natural frequency. Sorry about that. But good catch. So we've kind of already stepped through. If I'm going to have some kind of steering controller, and I want to actually be able to get to the speed of steering that I want, I'm going to need some integral controller. If not, I have error, right? And there's going to be some trade-off between steady state error and heading tracking and kind of transient performance, right? Meaning my ability to have low overshoot and fast settling time. Continuing with the performance measures, section 5.7, we're not going to explicitly touch these for now, defines what I would consider some pretty common sense performance measures, whether you're going to track just the error of the reference command, or you might track the integral squared error, or these kind of different root mean square type error, and you can design controllers based on optimizing for that parameter. And they're prescribing... They kind of have effectively like a lookup table for a way to try to match up parameters for the optimal case. Right? The thing to remember when you're looking at those or solving for a particular performance measure, like section 5.7 does, is that optimal in that case means mathematically optimal. Right? And when we talk a little bit later, we're going to talk briefly about what's called optimal control. And when we say optimal, we mean mathematically optimal. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the best solution to your problem. Right? So try to remember that distinction. That gets lost sometimes Even I'll read kind of academic research papers that lose that distinction. Yes, this is mathematically optimal, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about and what they mentioned in section 5.7, doesn't necessarily mean that it's the optimal solution for the problem you're trying to solve. There's a distinction there. Okay, questions about that?
So it's kind of like your mathematical solution requires some sort of balance, and then your actual solution requires some sort of balance against that.
Sure. So the mathematical solution, the optimal mathematical solution, depends on you defining some equation or something that you think represents the optimal case. But it may not. Right? So that's where those kind of optimal controllers, the skill comes in, picking what am I actually minimizing or optimizing against, what constraints am I trying to enforce. And that's where the control system designer skill comes in effectively. Questions? Okay. So I have almost everybody's exam. You can pick up on the way out the solutions. Went out, were posted, I think, last night. This is everybody. Final grades on the back. Hold on for just 1 second, please. Final grades on the back. They do get curved. I usually don't really mess with the curve until the kind of overall grade. But you can look at, I haven't posted them yet, but I'll post the stats, basically, on what the average for each problem was, what the class average was for the exam, standard deviation, that kind of thing. The way I tend to look at grading for these exams is the class average is the BC split. So if your class average above, it's a B, class average below, it's a C, and the standard deviations around that. All right, so trying to kind of normalize for this test being hard or too long and that kind of stuff, maybe. All right, again, I'll post those stats later. Solutions have been up since last night sometime. I made a small update this morning, if you got it then. So you can check it out. Yes, sir?
Is it possible, can we meet with you to go over the test, not to like get back points or anything, but just to, like, to see if we mess something up wrong?
So let's yeah, if you have specific questions, just bounce me an email to meet. I will be out from 5 o'clock today through Friday, so it'll have to be next week. But just bounce me an email. We can set up a time. If you guys talk to each other and decide that everyone had a problem with a specific, you know, all misunderstanding the same thing. I didn't really see anything like that, but maybe I just missed it. But if there's something and you guys talk to each other and figure out, oh, we all misunderstood this. I didn't really see it. We might can go over class. What I'll probably do is do a video on that or some extra notes and walk through the solution in more detail. The solutions, I think, have a decent amount of detail. I try to explain why I'm doing what I'm doing when I can.
So we don't have physical lecture Thursday. We have video lecture.
Well, it's probably not going to be a video, but there'll be notes posted. Okay. Yeah. All right. There you go. See you guys next week.